Well, thank you, Mr. Haney, and off we go. Who is to blame? Whose fault is it? Ever had that question asked to you? Maybe as you were children, something was broken, something happened, and parents would ask, who's to blame? And normally fingers would point opposite each other, or at least it's not me. I had a friend who lived in the Great Northwest a number of years ago, still does, and he tells a story about his childhood. He had several brothers and sisters, stair steps, five or six, seven children in the family, and they would always be into something because they're kids. Well, one time they were all playing, it was the wintertime, they're all in a room together. And this was mom and dad's bedroom there, and they were playing and goofing around, and on dad's dresser was a can of shaving cream. Six or seven kids, can of shaving cream, you can imagine what would happen at some point. Well, as the story goes, they were all playing, and dad hears out in the other room, and he knew what had happened. So he came in, and there's shaving cream all over the wall above the dresser. So, of course, he's quite upset that all this stuff is on the wall now and has to be cleaned up. So he asks, who's to blame? Who did this? And all the children together say, I didn't do it. It happened by itself. Line them up. Of course, those were the days when corporal punishment could be talked about publicly. So all the children line up, grab your ankles, one swat, right down the line. All right, who did it? Who's to blame? None of us. I didn't do it. It didn't happen by itself. Line up, hold your ankles, down the line again. Just as he's finishing the second time down the line, the shaving cream goes off by itself and sprays on the wall. So they really were blameless. The father said, I felt horrible. But who could have guessed that the shaving cream would just shoot off by itself? Now the children in the audience are thinking, aha, now I have an excuse. Turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy chapter 18 verse 13 makes one simple point. And it kind of relates to this question, who is to blame? Who's to blame? Deuteronomy 18 and verse 13 makes one simple point. Moses here writing, in essence, encouraging the Israelites of the next generation who will be inhabiting the promised land, reminding them of what they should have known growing up, what they should be familiar with. And he's reviewing much of the history of Israel up to that point. He simply says this in Deuteronomy 18 verse 13. You shall be blameless before the Eternal your God. You shall be blameless. There is an obvious request from the God whom we worship here in the Old Testament to his people. Be blameless. That's a tall order. Now, we'll come back to this section of Deuteronomy 18 a little bit later to discuss this a bit more thoroughly. But we ask ourselves, am I blameless? My life were to be examined, would I be blameless? Let's look to the New Testament to see if something similar is written there. 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter chapter 3. All of us have probably been in that situation where we're asked, who's to blame? Sometimes I can recall from my past, I'm sure, I can't think of a specific incident, but I know I'm sure I lied at some point when I was definitely guilty and probably said I wasn't. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 14. We're told in the Old Testament, you shall be blameless. How about in the New? How about for Christians today? 2 Peter 3 and verse 14. Therefore, beloved, looking forward to these things, be diligent to be found by Him in peace, without spot, and blameless. Blameless. Again, we're reading from the New King James. We'll talk about some of the other translations later on. But we're told to exercise diligence so that when we are examined, we will be found to be blameless. And that's, again, a tall order. We are asked, maybe we could say by this scripture, commanded to be blameless. What does it mean to be blameless before God? Has anyone ever been blameless? If so, how does one get to be blameless? What exactly is God speaking about? During the course of the sermon, we'll examine this topic of blamelessness. I hope we learn better what the Bible speaks of, what it means when it talks of being blameless. So let's turn to the book of Job and ask the first question. First question might be, has anyone ever been blameless? I mean, are you serious? Blameless? Well, the book of Job indicates that there has been an individual who is blameless, or who was blameless. Book of Job in chapter 1. Job 1 in verse 1. You know where we're going with this. You probably remember the story very well. God chooses Job because he was an exemplary human being. An exemplary human being. An outstanding spiritual example. So God brings Job to the attention of Satan the devil. Not that Satan wasn't aware already. But it says, there was a man, Job 1 verse 1, in the land of Uz, whose name was Job. Apparently, there was this yellow brick road that led to Uz. No, I'm kidding. All right, wrong story. There was a man named Job, and that man was blameless. He was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. Job was blameless. Now, if we drop down to verse 8, we'll see what God does with Job. The Lord said to Satan, the Eternal says to Satan, Have you considered, Job, my servant, Job? This blameless man was God's servant. When God asked, have you considered this man? Have you thought deeply about this man? Some translations were, have you set your heart on Job? Here's why I say that Satan certainly had Job in his crosshairs before this. Have you set your heart on Job? Might be a way of saying this. Another way, have you thought about this, Satan? Here's a person who's upright, who is blameless. Have you considered my servant Job, that there's none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? We might be able to say that Job was one of a kind in his blamelessness. Kind of on the whole earth, there's nobody like him. Was Job a bad guy? No, he was an outstanding human being. Spiritually solid and strong, worshipful of God, serving the needy and the poor. An outstanding man. Turn over a page to Job chapter 2 in verse 3. In verse 1, there was a day when sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" Satan said to the Lord, answered the Lord, saying, "From going to and fro on the earth, walking back and forth on it, just doing my job." You gave me charge of the earth, just doing my job. Pretty nonspecific. What have you been doing lately? Just my job. Well, what does that mean? Nonetheless, verse 3, then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered, have you thought deeply about this?" And again, maybe that means, have you set your heart on him? "But have you thought this through, that there's none like my servant Job, that there's none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and shuns evil?" It is possible, apparently, to be blameless. Job was blameless. Turn to the New Testament. 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. In chapter 2 and verse 10. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 10. Now, not exactly the same wording is used here of the Apostle Paul, but I think we can say that he and his associates who were serving the Thessalonians, the brethren there, were also blameless. And again, as we read these scriptures, we ask ourselves, am I blameless before God? Am I blameless? Can I be blameless? 1 Thessalonians 2, in verse 10. "You are witnesses," Paul says to the brethren at Thessalonica, "you are witnesses, and God also, he's my witness, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe." And he says, "You know how we exhorted, comforted, charged every one of you as a father does his children, that you walk worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." Paul says, we behaved blamelessly. Job was blameless. Paul says, we, so he and those who were with him, we ourselves, in other words, there were several, not told all who Paul, apparently Silvanus and Timothy, at least, they're in the greetings to the letter at the beginning of the chapter, beginning of chapter 1. So at least those three men were blameless. Are there others? Turn to 1 Timothy. We mentioned Timothy in the beginning of this letter to the Thessalonians. 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy 3, in, well, we'll begin in verse 1. It's a faithful saying, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 1. Faithful saying that if a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. It's not wrong to desire the position of the bishop if it's for the motive to serve others. If it's the motive to be over others, it is a sinful motive, and that will eventually be found out. It'll eventually be exposed. But if it's desiring a position of a bishop to serve others and do the work of God, then that's a good and a right thing. A bishop must then be, first thing, blameless. Blameless. So Timothy was being told by Paul to look out among the brethren and find those who are blameless. Now, it doesn't say everyone who is blameless would be ordained an elder. But he's saying one of the first things that you must look for if you're going to put someone in responsibility over brethren to care for them, make sure they are blameless. So again, we ask ourselves, am I blameless? It says the bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, in verse 3, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. Lots of other qualifications there, but the first one is he should be blameless. You cannot blame this man with anything, apparently. Turn over to Titus chapter 1. Paul likewise writing, just a few pages over here, Titus chapter 1, in verses 5 and 6. Same thing, he's encouraging Titus to be sure that he sets things in order by ordaining elders in each of the congregations that Titus was then responsible for. For this reason, Paul writes in verse 5 to Titus, I left you in Crete. Here's why I left you there. That you should set in order the things that are lacking. God's people need organization, according to Paul. They need elders who love them, who care for them, who want to look out for them, who will teach them God's way and encourage them to live God's way. That you should set in order the things that are lacking. And appoint elders in every city as I have commanded you. Then verse 6. If a man is, first in the list, blameless. Then the husband of one wife, having children not accused of dissipation or insubordination. Bishop must be, verse 7, blameless. Bishop is just an overseer or an elder. An elder must be blameless. Now, we also know that deacons likewise are asked to be blameless. Interesting. So it is possible to be blameless. Job was, Paul was, Timothy was, Titus probably was, Silvanus apparently was, and all these elders that were going to be ordained were blameless. And some of us probably think at this point, like, wow, how can you be blameless? Well, second question is that. Is it possible for me to be blameless? We know it's possible to be blameless. Some have been called blameless. Is it possible for me to become blameless? Turn to Psalm 119. Psalm 119. If you've been listening to Dr. Levy's Jeremiah classes, I learned something in the very first class that just never struck me before. When he said, Jeremiah is the longest book in the Bible, I said, it is not. And then he went on to explain that the book of Psalms, which I always thought was the longest book of the Bible, and Psalm 119, the longest chapter in the Bible, said, no, the book of Psalms is actually five different books in the Hebrew. So whoop-de-doo, he taught me something I didn't know, and that's good, but very true. So here you have in the longest chapter of the used-to-be longest book, encouragement, Psalm 119 and verse 80. Very instructive classes. You'll find them very enjoyable and helpful if you haven't been listening. You might try to make some room in your schedule for that. Psalm 119 and verse 80. David asks this, let my heart be blameless regarding your statutes, that I may not be ashamed. Now, we could talk a lot about what David seems to be asking regarding statutes and what they are and all those things. We won't take the time to do that now. But what we will focus on is he said there is a state that you can come to be blameless. And to be blamable is shameful. So I don't want to have shame. I want to be blameless. Don't want to be shameful, but shameless. David beseeching God here to be blameless, and as a result, avoid shame. Let my heart be blameless regarding your statutes. So now we begin to see being blameless has to do with some things that we do. Statutes in this case. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter 3 and verse 14. 2 Peter 3 and verse 14. Question again, is it possible for me to become blameless? David asked that his heart become blameless before God. How about Peter? Peter's not talking about himself asking for his heart, but you'll find that Peter now is really including the brethren, all of us. 2 Peter 3 and verse 14. Therefore, beloved, looking forward to these things, be diligent. So being blameless includes the concept of diligence. It's going to take some work. Be diligent to be found by him in peace, that takes diligence, without spot, and blameless. Peter is saying, with diligence, looking forward to something, it is possible to be blameless. He wants the brethren to be found blameless. And, thankfully, verse 15, consider that the long suffering of the Lord is salvation. I'm glad he adds that. In essence, what he's saying is that before you get discouraged and give up on being spotless and blameless, remember God is very patient. Oh, that's very helpful. He has lots of suffering longness. He's got lots of patience that way. So it is possible. Peter asks the members to be diligent so they can be found blameless. So it must be possible. It wasn't just the spiritual giants like Job or Paul or Timothy or Silvanus or Peter here that were blameless. He was encouraging all the brethren that you can be found blameless before God. That should be very encouraging. So what exactly does it mean then to be blameless? What does it mean? We want to be blameless. Anytime someone says, is it your fault? Are you to blame? It's usually not a good thing. No one says, pretty typically, if someone does something very thoughtful and kind. Now who's to blame for this? We don't say it that way. We might say, wow, who did this? That's so thoughtful. But if someone says, who's to blame? It's always something bad. What does it mean to be blameless? Let's go back to Genesis chapter 17. Genesis 17. All the way back to the story of Abraham. God had been working with Abraham up to this point and told he and his wife that they would have a child to fulfill the promise that God had made to him, that he would have descendants like the sand of the sea, which certainly has taken place. But in chapter 17, you get this kind of official start of this covenant relationship with God and with Abraham. When Abraham, or Abram, was 99 years old, chapter 17 and verse 1. When Abram was 99 years old, that's old. It wasn't particularly old, apparently, for that time, but it was getting up there. The Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am Almighty God, El Shaddai. Walk before me and be blameless. Walk before me and be blameless. The King James Version of the Scripture, oftentimes when the New King James uses the word blameless, the King James uses the word perfect. Walk before me and be perfect. Be blameless. I like the word blameless better because it conveys a little more clearly what God seems to be intending. He wasn't telling Abraham, walk before me and never, ever sin again. Now, that's certainly God's intent, but that's not reality while we're in the flesh. So he said, be blameless. Walk before me and be blameless. The Hebrew word for blameless or perfect in the King James is tamim. Tamim, T-A-M-I-Y-M. And it means to be complete or whole or entire or sound. It was often the word that was used for sacrificial animals. I want them to be sound without obvious blemish. So it can mean healthful. Can mean wholesome, unimpaired, innocent, having integrity. Jacinius in his Hebrew lexicon says this, free from blemish. Remember it says in the Old Testament, you bring the lamb of the first year and it should be without blemish. It's the word blameless, without blemish, without obvious flaw. Sound, upright in conduct and blameless is what the word means when applied to human beings. When it's applied to animals, it means without blemish, without flaw, without defect. So you look at something and you say, I can't see any defect in this animal. All right, then it's fit for the sacrificial system. So when God said to Abraham, walk before me and be blameless, what he asked Abraham to do is to be upright in conduct. To be upright in conduct. To be wholesome. To be sound. To be, in essence, spiritually healthful. So now when we begin to see that, Paul was blameless. He was upright in conduct. He was wholesome. He was spiritually healthful. God said about Job, have you noticed my servant Job, that he shuns evil? In other words, he's upright in conduct. He is blameless. Now, if we look up the word blameless then in English, why did translators take that temim and bring it into the word blameless, applying it to human beings? Well, because in English, the word blameless means innocent of wrongdoing. Synonyms are innocent, guiltless, above reproach. Like a sacrificial animal, a blameless person should have no obvious and clear and easy to find faults or sins. Other synonyms, irreproachable, unimpeachable, exemplary, perfect, virtuous, pure, impeccable, faultless. So what are we talking about? What does the scripture talk about when it says men and women were blameless? It means they were without obvious fault or flaw. They were upright in conduct. Let's look at the New Testament equivalent to that, Philippians chapter 3. Most often the Greek word amemptos is translated blameless. That's found in Philippians 3, verses 4 through 6. Philippians 3, verses 4 through 6. In essence, amemptos is the equivalent to the Greek temim, or the Hebrew temim, and it means blameless, free from fault or defect. So when Paul said, you know how we behaved among you, blameless, he's saying we were without fault or defect. Now, did he mean that they were absolutely sinless? It is important to note, when we talk about being blameless, we are not talking about being sinless. We're not actually even at some point talking about being guiltless at all times. But we are talking about being blameless, upright in conduct, virtuous, without flaw in those areas. Philippians 3, beginning in verse 4. Though also I might have confidence in the flesh, Paul is talking about false teachers and how they claim to be extremely important individuals for various reasons. In this case, apparently Jewish individuals were coming to the Philippians, the Gentiles, and telling them what they needed to be doing in regard to Jewish tradition. Today those people are called Messianic Jews or Messianic Christians. Same approach, same attitude. That in order to really be righteous, you have to wear a prayer shawl. You have to have a fringe of white and blue hanging from your belt loop so that you can be reminded to do God's commandments. Well, excuse me, that's what God's Spirit is supposed to do. I should not have to hold on to a fringe to remind myself if I have God's Spirit. But again, don't want to get off track too much, but sometimes, and yet with the Messianics, you get all kinds of concepts. On one hand, it's just a prayer shawl you have to wear, and women have to cover their heads. But then you go from there to you have to do the Seder, you have to do this, you have to do that. And it's all, you know, variations in there. It's every shade of how much Jewish tradition do you have to be righteous. Well, they were running the same kind of things here. And Paul is saying, look, if there's anybody that can teach you about Jewish tradition, it's me. Because I'm way above these characters when it comes to knowing what's what in Jewish tradition. And if you could win God over by carrying out these traditions, I would have won God over a long time ago. Because I knew exactly what to do and I did it without flaw. But it didn't do me any good whatsoever. Philippians 3 verse 4, though I also might have confidence in the flesh. If anyone thinks that he may have confidence in the flesh, I more so. These guys think they're something. When it comes to Jewishness, I was the Jew. That's what he's saying. Verse 5, circumcised the eighth day, of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews. You talk about being a Hebrew, being a Jew, I was the Jew. Way more diligent than these yahoos, is what he's saying. Somebody want to trust in the flesh? I could have done that. Concerning the law, a Pharisee. You don't get any more righteous than that in that day and age. Concerning zeal, how zealous was Paul? He killed people for not following what he thought was right. He persecuted the church. He was the one holding garments when Stephen was stoned. Hey, let me hold that so you can throw better. Bring it over. He consented to the death of Stephen. Had other people drug out of their homes, thrown in prison and killed. Talk about prizing the flesh. Concerning zeal, persecuting the church. Concerning the righteousness which is in the law, blameless. Blameless. You could look at Paul's life as a Pharisee. He did everything without flaw that the Pharisees required. Now, much of that God didn't certainly require at all. In fact, much of it was extremely ill approached from God's perspective. But what he is saying is that he was free from fault or defect carrying out the nth detail of the law. Talk about tithing. He knew exactly how many cumin seeds to count out, and he did it perfectly and diligently. It was without flaw. So, when we understand the word blameless, it means without obvious flaw or fault. It means upright in conduct. Now, Paul is not saying that he was perfect before God by any means, but he says, as far as the Pharisees' guidelines, as far as the Judaism, salvation by works, he had it down perfectly and executed it without flaw, blamelessly. So God expects us to become blameless. He encourages us to become blameless, not in the way Paul was, but blameless in regard of innocent of wrongdoing, exemplary, virtuous, pure, impeccable, irreproachable, unimpeachable, innocent, whole, spiritually healthful, upright in conduct. And it is possible to be that way. Not on our own, we know that. How does one then become blameless? How does one become blameless? We know that should be our goal. How do we get there? First, strive to walk in all the commandments and ordinance of the Lord, or of the Eternal. It's a long point, I know, but it's one taken directly from the Scripture. Luke chapter 1 and verse 6. Strive to walk in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord. Luke chapter 1 and verse 6. Luke chapter 1, as you know, and chapter 2 and 3 talk about Christ's birth and then the preparation of John the Baptist. Luke chapter 1 and verse 6. Verse 5, we get the background. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea a certain priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah. His wife was of the daughters of Aaron. Her name was Elizabeth. So you have these two Levites. Not just Levites, but from the priestly family of Aaron. One of the segments of the family of Levi. And, verse 6, they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinance of the Lord, blameless. Now, Zacharias and Elizabeth would have been doing lots of things that you and I don't need to do at that time. Being priests, he would have done all kinds of things that were required of him. But the point is, how do we become blameless? Well, by doing the same thing, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord. Okay, that's an easy thing to say. You want to be blameless? Keep the Ten Commandments without flaw. Great. I'm trying. Sometimes I don't do it perfectly. Understood. Understandable. But this should be our striving. What do we say about Abram back in Genesis 17? God said, walk before me and be blameless. Walk requires effort to follow God's commands. And again, that takes time. I think more than anything today, what brethren we need is time to meditate. Now, there's lots of things we need. But our schedules are so jam-packed that for us to sit and take time and maybe analyze each of the commandments and say, how can I better fulfill this? How can I better walk in this commandment? So, worship the Lord your God first and foremost. And we look at that first commandment, we sort through it. How can I better do that? How can I better walk in that commandment? How am I walking in that commandment now? We can look at each of God's commandments in that way. Am I blameless? If someone holds up my life next to the Ten Commandments, would I be found full of blame or blameless? How about a second suggestion? To become blameless, quit complaining and resisting. Now we may be saying, well, that's getting a little personal. That stuff about the commandments is okay because that's Bible. But turn to Philippians chapter 2 in verse 14. Paul tells us how to become blameless. And it is interesting that a complaining person is not blameless. Complainer is not blameless. And yet, what is the easiest thing for me to do? Complain. Bellyache, murmur. But all the things that aren't right. Just get in the car and drive. And you have plenty of things to complain about in the first few minutes. Or at least as soon as you meet another car on the road or come up behind them. Because the road is full of idiots. That's just the way it is. And you might be saying, yes, and you're one of them, and you'd be right. We're all that way. Philippians 2 and verse 14. Do all things without complaining. Wow, what a tall order that is. Why? Do all things without complaining and disputing. The word disputing we'll look at in a few moments, but let's get the context first. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless. We cannot be blameless if we're always bellyaching. God seems to particularly hate murmuring. That's what the word means, murmuring. King James actually translates it that way. Do all things without murmuring. Complaining or murmurings, the Greek word kuskosmos means just that, muttering, murmuring. A literal definition, secret displeasure not openly avowed. Secret displeasure. So I can complain without ever opening my mouth. Because I can think it And it's the same thing. There's a comedian that we enjoy listening to occasionally who talks about his difficulty with his hearing. He's getting older, and he says, I'm having trouble hearing. It's kind of a strange thing. So I went for a hearing test and sat in there, this little room, and my wife was out there with the fellow who's conducting the hearing test, and I heard over the earphone saying, as soon as you will go ahead and say a word, and then once you hear the word, go ahead and raise your hand. And he said, okay, that sounds simple enough. So he sat there, and he's looking at his wife and the fellow out there, and doesn't hear anything. And he said, I'm not hearing anything. He said, oh, we haven't started yet. Hang on. He thought he was completely deaf. But then he starts talking about how he looks out there and he sees his wife laughing. Because he hears the word and he repeats a word, but it's obviously a different word. So he finally says, I see you laughing out there. You better stop that. But then he talks about hearing other people. And he said, I started looking into these devices. I didn't want a hearing aid, but started looking into these devices. I saw an advertisement for Miracle Ear. And you put this thing in your ear and you can hear anyone. And the commercial shows out on the beach. And a woman has in the Miracle Ear. And she overhears two other women talking and saying, wow, doesn't she look amazing? And he said, did you ever whisper that to somebody else? Nah. Whispering was invented for other things. Things that you don't want people to hear. Complaining is almost always on the quiet side. Interesting. We cannot be blameless with a complaining spirit. Complaining spirit focuses on what's wrong, on the problems of others usually, on what is other people's fault. It looks to usually give blame to others. Whispering was not invented for compliments. Whispering is usually for complaining or criticizing. Secret displeasure. So if we want to be blameless, we work on a spirit of complaining. Getting rid of that spirit of complaining. The word disputing here can literally mean inward reasonings. How would that apply in this case? Do all things without complaining and these inward reasonings. Thinking, in essence, basically talks about doubting what God has said. Why would God say that? Why would God make that decision? Why would God think that way? Why would God do that? Why would God allow this or that? It's a questioning spirit of God. Doubting might be a better word. And it talked in essence about doubting God. So we want to be blameless. We're striving to get rid of the complaining spirit and get rid of the questionings of God. God knows what He's doing. And asking the why question many times does not provide an answer in this age. God, why am I suffering? You know, Job could have asked that question 100 times. And he may still have asked that question at the end of his life and not quite understood it. He knew he was worthless. He knew God was God. But why? Was that the purpose? Would Job have understood in his lifetime, you know, Job, I want this written down as a book to help hundreds of thousands of my future children. Job may never have known that. Nonetheless, quit complaining, quit resisting God, quit disputing, quit questioning God, and we can become blameless. Once we have the faith to know that God's decision is always best, God's decision is right, no matter what we might think about, we're not going to question that. Well, that doesn't mean things don't hurt and there aren't problems and challenges along the way. But if we want to be blameless, we work on that attitude of complaining and doubting. Third thing we can do, third suggestion, avoid wicked customs. We said we'd go back to Deuteronomy 18 a little bit later on, and now is the time. Deuteronomy chapter 18. When we read earlier in the sermon that God said, "You shall be blameless," we read right in the middle of the context of Deuteronomy 18. We'll pick up the context now. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9. God says, "When you come into the land which the Eternal your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations." Period. Don't do it. So if the nations before you cut down a green tree, bring it into their living rooms, put stuff all over it, don't follow those things. Don't think that I would appreciate you doing those things to me. I mean, there's a movement right now in the quote-unquote Christian community to win back Christmas. Because a growing amount of the population is understanding that Christmas comes from paganism. And so, those in the Wiccan community especially are making a big deal about this. And they get a lot of press these days. And you'll see that more and more over the next 2 months as we roll up to the Christmas season. Saying, "Look, this was our holiday, you stole it, give it back to us." And so now there's a movement in the Christian community, "So what? Yeah, we did steal it, but it's ours now, shut up." Excuse me, no it isn't. God does not appreciate using customs that were used to worship false gods and somehow applying it to Him. He's not pleased with that. Don't follow the abominations of those nations. Don't do these wicked customs. "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft, or a soothsayer, one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, one who conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritist, one who calls up the dead. For all who do these things are an abomination to the Eternal. Because these abominations, the Eternal God, for these abominations, the Eternal God drives them out from before you. You shall be blameless." So avoid wicked customs. "For these nations," verse 14, "which you will dispossess, listen to soothsayers and diviners. But you, as for you, the Eternal God has not appointed you for such." Avoid wicked customs. Now, wicked customs in this case refers to all these false spiritual issues that the people were doing before them, dabbling with demons. But does it only include that? Are there other wicked customs out there in our culture today that we ought to avoid? Well, you could make a list as long as your arm, and we'll leave you to do that in your own personal study. What are some of the wicked customs of this culture that we should avoid? There's plenty of them out there. But let's go on. Time is running out. Number four, fourth suggestion to become blameless, follow blameless men and women. Follow blameless men and women. It's one of the reasons fellowship is so important, because we can inspire one another to better things. Psalm 37. Psalm 37 in verse 37 and 38. Now some will say, "Well, I'm not supposed to follow any man." And that's just not true. Paul at times said, "Follow me as I follow Christ." Another time he said, "Follow me." What we read in Philippians, he said, "You know, brethren, how we behaved ourselves among you blamelessly." You know what I want to do? I'd want to follow that example. Psalm 37 and verse 37. We're not trusting in men for our salvation, but we are following good examples. We want to do that. That's good for us. Psalm 37 verse 37. "Mark the blameless man." Take note of the blameless man and observe the upright. Now, in one sense, David is saying, watch what happens. Watch what happens to the blameless man, to the upright. "For the future of that man is peace." So why wouldn't we want to follow that kind of example? Why wouldn't we want to? If that man is going to receive peace, and of course the ultimate peace is being born into God's family and living forever, why wouldn't we want to follow that? So it's perfectly acceptable to follow righteous behavior, upright, blameless behavior. We see each other, we talk to each other, we're inspired by each other. Fellowship is a good and an important and a right thing so that we can build each other up and encourage each other. It's always, to me, fascinating to see what we can learn from each other. When someone says, well, we stopped by and did this. Oh, wow, why didn't I think to do that? Inspires us to do that. Follow that blameless man or that blameless woman. Verse 38 says, but the transgressors shall be destroyed altogether. Don't want to follow that. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. We don't want that. We want to mark the blameless man or woman. Observe that upright person and follow their example. Last but not least, number five. Fifth suggestion, root out presumptuousness. Root out presumptuousness. Not sure I could spell presumptuousness without a spell checker. But if you put in parentheses behind that, be humble. That's all that means. Be humble. This time turn to Psalm 19, just back a few pages from where we are here. Psalm 19, in verse 12. Humility seems to be the key for so much spiritual success. Christ emptied himself to become a human being. The ultimate act of humility. Died even though being perfect and blameless. Great example of being humble. Nothing presumptuous there at all. Psalm 19, verse 12. Who can understand his errors? David asked the question. We look at ourselves and can't understand it. Don't even see sometimes what our errors are. So he says, cleanse me from secret faults. Verse 13, keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me, then I shall be blameless. Help me to be humble. Humble is one of the hardest things for human beings to be. So that's one of the chief characteristics of our God, humility. So then I shall be blameless. And then he finishes by saying, and I shall be innocent of great transgression. So we ask God to root out presumptuousness. Maybe pride is another word there. To be humble. To cleanse us from our secret faults. To keep us away from presumptuous sins. Presumptuous sins are those that I think I know better than God. I'll do what I want. But we're asked to be blameless. We have somewhat of a menu, a recipe, we might say, to be able to become blameless. Let's close by turning to Proverbs 11 in verse 20. Proverbs 11 in verse 20. Brethren, we're called to be blameless. To be individuals who stand before God upright, not sinless, not without guilty pasts. We're called to God to be blameless, to be upright, to be morally pure. It's a challenge we will strive to attain until the day we die. Proverbs 11, verse 20. Strive we will. Those who are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the eternal. See, blamelessness has to do with the heart. But the blameless in their ways are his delight. Let us strive, brethren, to be blameless, God's delight.